Welcome, friends, to our lecture tonight, entitled, What is Man? As many of you have perhaps reflected, the answer to this question is also the answer to many of the current problems which plague our world today. Our lecturer tonight, Mr. Charles M. Carr of New York City, has had acquaintance with some of the temporal modes of answering this question, as he has been a student at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and has worked with the public in the fields of sales and advertising. But he is here tonight to answer spiritually, according to Christian Science, the question, what is man? In a manner that will be helpful not only in improving our own lives, but of society as a whole. Mr. Carr is a lifelong Christian Scientist who early left the business world to serve in the public practice of Christian Science, who has also worked in a public relations capacity with Christian Science churches in New Jersey, who in 1952 became an authorized teacher of Christian Science, and who is now a member of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship, traveling to the 50 states and much of the world. We of First Church Christ Scientist San Leandro are happy to present Mr. Charles M. Carr.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Killo. To those of you out here that I see, and to the unseen audience, I'd like to say how happy my wife and I are to be here again in this delightful area. We're going to have some fun this evening talking about the subject of man. And as my introducer pointed out so helpfully, to see where it leads, and I assure you it's going to lead into very good and happy avenues of thought and experience. Some time ago, you and I were, millions of us, sat fascinated before our television sets to watch the first human foot planted on the surface of the moon. You remember that? I think we can still picture it very vividly, seeing that man come out backwards and put his foot down. It was obviously a scientific achievement of technology. We marvel that sophisticated computers can bring to men to a point in space a quarter of a million miles out, put the men there, and then return them safely to Earth. Yet, with all our material scientific knowledge, our most basic human problems remain almost untouched. You and I keep hoping that material knowledge will finally provide the answers in these areas too. But what do we find? All we have to do is to pick up a newspaper, look at TV, possibly go to a movie or a play, and we're still confronted to a very considerable degree with crime, prejudice, indifference, frustration, social unrest. Now, if all our material scientific knowledge hasn't given us lasting and satisfying answers, will it ever? Dr. Ruth Adamson, in her epilogue, The World Perspective series, writes this. The laws of life have their origin beyond their mere physical manifestations and compel us to consider their spiritual source. At this point, we realize that we must unravel the tangled and polluted web that has caught up much of society. Many of us, many young people, really want to understand the laws of life, come to grips with themselves, learn how to get along better with one another. In short, we yearn how to penetrate to the very core or heart of life. The major question is, of course, how do we do it? And if we can really fathom our meaning and our identity, frankly, what good will it do? Will it really help us meet needs, solve problems, make the most of our lives? The answer is a happy yes, if we understand man's basic nature, if we put this understanding to work, apply it specifically, then we can elevate our individual lives and society as a whole. First, let's examine the question of man's essential nature. What makes up man? How would you, for example, describe people you know? A friend that's especially kind or thoughtful? A member of your family who can be relied upon for a sense of humor even in difficult times? A co-worker you would describe as lively, vital, full of fun? Don't we find ourselves saying, she's such a lovely person, he's very intelligent, and there's an individual I can trust, what wonderful qualities. Now obviously, these fine qualities can't be measured physically. They can't be measured with scientific instruments. Take one of the finest of all qualities expressed in our human experience, a mother's love. Can you measure, imagine measuring that quality in a test tube? Of course not. Though these qualities can't be measured physically or scientifically, aren't they real? The statement, I like you, makes sense. But if I were to say, I like all of you over here on my left, 84 7/10%. Or that I have 50 grams of respect for all of you over here on my right, you'd probably laugh at me. So we would all agree that there are real qualities, things that make us worthy of the name man in the highest sense. But again, you can't measure them physically or scientifically. And frankly, it's even difficult to describe them in a concrete, objective way. And you can't write them off. For isn't it the individual expression of just these qualities that constitutes man's real nature? Only when we begin to think of man in terms of inherent spiritual qualities can we know what man is all about. We can't get to the real you and the real me from the physical aspects alone. We need to think deeper than the surface sense of man. And here's an example. Woman I know received a gift. It was a round piece of blue plastic embedded with small pieces of quartz. Seemed without beauty or without use. So she did what many of us do when we receive such a gift. She didn't have the heart to confine it immediately to the waste paper basket. So she made a compromise. She left it in its wrappings and filed it away on a shelf. Some months later, she came across the thing, the gift. And she looked at it and was still in the valley of indecision. She just pushed it along the shelf. Well, as it was moved, a small piece of paper came trickling out, fell to the floor. She picked it up and noticed it was an instruction, which she hadn't seen before. And it read simply, "Hang in the sunlight." Much to her surprise, when she did this, the sun's rays brought out a beautiful variety of color. Now, people you and I know, don't some of them sometimes seem rather commonplace and uninteresting? We're tempted to even to ignore them until we see them in the light of appreciation and understanding that transcends a quick, indifferent view. Then we see the good in them, their real potential. Really, then, what we need to do is to get introduced to the real you and the real me, our true individuality and identity, underneath the material wrappings of outward appearance. Jesus said, "Judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment." Some time ago, I was giving a talk to a university group, and afterwards, as is the usual custom, there was a lively question-answer period. One student got up and he said, "Mr. Carr, I have no question, but I have a comment to make." He said, "If Jesus were here today, talking to this university group, knowing his great ability to communicate with people, including the young, possibly here's the way he phrased that well-known saying to be with it in today's language, something like this: all right, students, let's be smart enough not to be hung up on the outward appearance. Really, then, what we need to do is to get introduced to our real selves. We have to think more deeply than the outward appearance sense of man, that he's just a physical being with a mental motor inside, that he's got a lot of faults and imperfections. We have to get behind this dress and symbols of life and see man in terms of qualities, spiritual qualities, godlike qualities, good qualities. Bible puts it this way: mark the perfect man and behold the upright, for the end of that man is peace. Now, what's perfect man? Outward appearance man? Hardly. Perfect man is the individual expression of godlike spiritual qualities. How we look at man is vitally important, tremendously fulfilling. Jesus proved that, said we could too. And he showed us what a big difference it made as we saw man correctly. And the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy, spells out specifically how he did it. She says this in her book, Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures: Jesus beheld inside the perfect man, who appeared to him where sinning mortal man appears to mortals. In this perfect man, the Savior saw God's own likeness, and this correct view of man healed the sick. Note, God's own likeness, not man's own likeness. The sick, the correct view healed the sick. What's the sick? Well, I think he referred not only to sick body, of course, but could be a sick business, a sick profession, a sick community, a sick political situation, a sick relationship, a sick academic effort, or what have you. The correct view heals the sick. The sick is the incorrect point of view. There's no incurable problem because there's no incurable point of view. All right, what's the correct point of view? It's the view of the truth of man that Jesus taught and practiced. The Christ truth. Man in the image and likeness of God, not the image and likeness of the physicality. And Jesus said that the spiritual view is our Savior. From what? From sin, sickness, lack, imperfection, insecurity, discord, all these negatives. It's our Savior from the effects of wrong thinking, which is the outgrowth of a false point of view that man is physical. And we correct these discords as we spiritualize our thinking. You see, man's real identity and true individuality is found only in the conscious, active embodiment of qualities. Good qualities, spiritual qualities, God-like qualities. And we've already mentioned a few. Kindness, love, intelligence, integrity, goodness. Now, aren't qualities such as these, what you and I love and respect and value in one another, aren't they what make up our true manhood or womanhood? Well, what about non-spiritual qualities? Qualities that aren't very good, not good at all. Sin, sickness, lack, imperfection, inharmony, discord, insecurity, frustration. These are simply the result of false points of view. The man is physical, limited, imperfect. We correct our point of view, think out from God about ourselves, and we correct the false conditions and situations. We need to mark the perfect man. And I'd like to assure everyone here, everyone listening, that no one has to be a metaphysical giant to achieve this. We're talking about a profound truth, but one that's very simple. And let's have an illustration. Concerns the experience of a friend of mine, a college student, shortly after he had become interested in Christian Science. He was walking on campus one day, and he met his former roommate, whom he'd always disliked intensely. In his words, "You know, I just dislike that guy with enthusiasm." However, he stopped to speak to him, and he realized afterwards that this was the first time in a long time that he carried on a conversation with him with equanimity, and he'd even enjoyed it. Now, what happened here? Well, he changed his concept of man. He refused to believe that the material picture of man is just a physical being with a whole lot of faults and imperfections, was the man God made. Such a picture of man was simply a false view of man that his roommate was temporarily acting out. He realized that if he was really going to get along with his roommate, or anyone for that matter, he couldn't libel man with a false label. Instead, he had to realize that man was in truth, the divine reflection of God, the embodiment of spiritual qualities. He began to bring his new identification of man into accord with this statement of Mrs. Eddy in her book, Miscellaneous Writings. And she says this: "If one asks me, is my concept of you right? I reply, the human concept is always imperfect. Relinquish your human concept of me or of anyone and find the divine. and you gain the right one. And never until then. Well, the divine concept of man is the spiritual concept. And as a result of this correct concept of man, our student was more and more conscious of the evidence of good in man, of the spiritual presence of God being expressed by him. Like that woman who had to hang a gift in the sunlight to discover its real worth, this student had to hold his concept of man in the light of truth. The truth of man is spiritual rather than physical. The image and likeness of God rather than the image and likeness of physicality. What happened? Well, with his enlightened view, the darkness of prejudice and antipathy just disappeared. Now, did he change his roommate? He tried to. And his efforts were met with failure and frustration. But just as soon as he changed his concept of man to a godlike concept, he had a good relationship going with his roommate. This, my friends, is the nitty-gritty of good relationships, the essence of it all. Mrs. Eddy's great discovery was glimpsed this truth, that man's real nature is the conscious, active embodiment of godlike spiritual qualities. Nothing more, nothing less. That man wasn't in truth. I use that phrase in truth as contrasted with the physical sense of man, which isn't the basic truth of man. That man was in truth. The divine reflection of God, that he wasn't a mix of mentality and physicality. Perfect. That God or Spirit, and Spirit's another name the Bible gives to God, Spirit alone is the source of man's real being. His essence and substance. Not matter or its chemistry. As she reasoned from this basic premise and meditated on its spiritual import, she found it was able to bring about healing. Then she was ready to accept fully a new view of herself, of life, one not wrapped up in matter, the belief that man is physical. After she perceived this spiritual view of man, she was able to pursue a long career of worldwide benefit. She devoted the next 45 years of her life to reintroducing spiritual healing, which is a system of scientific truths. She discovered the science of man, a spiritual science, a universal science. Now, if I were here to speak to you on some science in music or mathematics, it's for everybody. And here's a spiritual science, not religion in the orthodox sense that can be compared to many others, but a universal spiritual science that anybody can get a hold of, chew on, digest, understand so thoroughly that he can put it to practice in the medium needs and solving of problems. Make a way of life, to make the most of our lives, to glorify God, a good, and serve our fellow man. In his book, New Think, Dr. Edward de Bono, who works at investigative medicine at Cambridge University, England, characterizes the usual approach to problems as vertical thinking, traditional logic. He points out the need for new think, lateral thinking, which generates new discoveries, because it deliberately voids probably only from the basis of old accepted premises, and reaches out in virtually every direction for a new idea. Dr. DeBono says, there is a sense of immortality in a new idea. He said his discovery was the result of such expanded thinking. The religion, or science, which he discovered, was a radical departure from conventional views. She progressively realized that matter-man couldn't be the real man. She saw she had to identify herself and all others as the spiritually mental expression of God, universal divine mind. And the spiritual fact expresses the basic premise of Christian Science. And here it is stated in a few words in its textbook, Science and Health. The Christ-like understanding of scientific being and divine healing includes a perfect principle and idea. Perfect God and perfect man as the basis of thought and demonstration. The essence of this statement is that man in his true nature, as contrasted with the outward appearance sense of man, man in his real nature, evidences all of the properties and qualities of his originating principle, God, mind. The mind is our sense of love and good and health and happiness and peace and plenty. Of course, at first glance, here I've been saying the man is essentially spiritual. At first glance, it seems as though I've ignored the physical bodies you and I have, and these other physical beings around us, and that we live in a physical world. And I ask any who raise this legitimate question to look about physical man and his environment as a temporary sense of life and hypothesis. Now, when we went to school, we studied hypotheses, and here's just one more. And hypothesis has its place, albeit temporary. We can, for one thing, relate to human life and communicate with one another. But physical man and environment is an hypothesis, a temporary sense of life, not ultimate reality. If it were, it wouldn't wear out. Paint wouldn't peel off, wouldn't rust. It's a temporary sense of life that can be improved. And we all want improvement. How? And why? Well, our bodies, our social life, you young people with your dates and your academic efforts, our business or professional activities, our relationships with one another, our interest perhaps in sports or drama or participation. All of our living is the objectification of our thinking. The only way on earth to have really better living is to have really better thinking. And better thinking is, comes to paraphrase that student, not to be hung up on the outward appearance sense of things, but to think deeply enough to identify ourselves and others, man and life, in terms of spiritual qualities, and work to discover these qualities, love them, surface them, express them. Then when uplifted thinking, uplifted experience. If seeing man correctly, as a spiritual identity, an individuality. If this is important, it must have relevance in our lives. And it certainly does. I'd like to give you an example. A friend of mine had difficulty with his back. From time to time, he'd be temporarily laid up, and each time he'd get out of his difficulty, through the prayerful realization that man was not physical, but spiritual. Well, one day he found himself completely immobilized. This bad condition went on for many months. He lost a lot of weight and became greatly discouraged. At one point he had x-rays taken. These x-rays showed advanced destruction of several lumbar vertebrae. And the diagnosis was alarming. It shocked him. But it also challenged him to think deeper than the x-ray sense of body. Through his in-depth study of Christian Science, he began to see that his true identity and individuality, his real work, was to the extent he recognized and expressed qualities, godlike spiritual qualities, and that he wasn't really essentially a physical being with a mental motor inside. That was the outward symbol of life. Then he began to realize that the medical verdict, that he was physical and diseased and in bad shape, didn't represent the ultimate truth of his identity or condition. Simply false points of view that got themselves painted on the canvas of life. Then he began to see that he didn't essentially have to change his body, but his thought. The turning point came as he pondered these wonderful lines of Thomas More. When from the lips of truth one mighty breath shall, like a whirlwind, scatter in its breeze the whole dark pile of human mockeries, then shall the reign of mind commence on earth, starting fresh as from a second birth. Man in the sunshine of the world's new spring shall walk transparent, like some holy thing. He started afresh to throw off a false non-spiritual sense of self. Wrapped up in matter, the belief he was physical, diseased, debilitated. Fifth. He anchored his thought with renewed vitality on God. How? By realizing that God, or good, and good and God are synonymous, was all true presence, filling all space, all power, the only mind or activity. That God was the life force of all actual being, and that was a good force. That God was all-embracing love. And he was included in that love as man. And the nature of love is to care for its offspring, maintain it. Maintain man at the point of present spiritual perfection. Then a little humor crept in, which always helps. He thought, well, if God is love, all-embracing love, ever-present love, eternal love, he's here now. He's not off on a vacation or sabbatical, leaving me to go on my own. I'm now out of orbit. Well, as he began to contemplate these things, there was a change in his thinking and therefore a change in his physical condition for the better. He began to be less concerned about physical appraisals, which was a result of a false premise that man is physical. Now, obviously, this was a deep analysis of his own true identity. It wasn't simply saying the words. It was the exercise of spiritual sense, not outsight, but the insight, through which we discover our real nature as spiritual rather than physical. His improvement came in 2 weeks' time as he insisted. I chose that word, insisted. It's a good, strong word. My friend insisted. This was no wishy-washy thing. He insisted that God was good, as the Bible says he is, and that he was all in all. And one God can have only one kind of man, spiritual and perfect. That's the basic truth about man.
outward appearance to the contrary notwithstanding. And he was that spiritual man. In view of this, he wasn't in truth. This is the basic truth that gets behind outward appearance, appraisals, and judgments. The basic truth of man. That man wasn't in truth made up of a material mentality or a physical brain that could be aware of all fear disease. Nor was man in truth made up of material parts that could express disease. Further, the basic fundamental truth that in God's allness, oneness, everywhereness and onlyness, there is in reality no disease as a claim or a claimant. He realized that disease, no matter what its name, nature, duration, whether it's considered big or little, easy or difficult to deal with, disease was in truth no more a part of the science of man than a mathematical mistake is a part of the science of numbers. He saw that discouragement came from believing he was physical and hinging his prospects on physical evidence. All discouragement, disappointment comes from a false premise. He saw that encouragement would come as he fully perceived he was immortal and accepted spiritual sense as the truth of his identity. His complete healing came when he did two basic things. He willingly gave up a material, personal, mortal, physical, and even human sense of man. Second, he joyfully and gratefully acknowledged God's allness and his perfect relationship to God as his all spiritual divine reflection. Today, my friend is in better health now than he's ever been. Back in business and active in sports, where obviously you need a good strong back. Now, what happened to him? Well, he was introduced to his real self. You and I spend a lot of time in our lives introducing people to one another, and this is good. But do we spend enough time to get introduced to our real self? What is man? The application of this spiritual point of view, this correct point of view of man, is exciting and is practical. Let me illustrate this further. University professor I know had trouble over many years with his eyes, need worn glasses. But with the study of Christian Science, he began to identify man differently, himself and others. Not as just a physical being with a whole lot of faults and imperfections. He began to give up some critical appraisals of people. He began to surrender some unkind thoughts, ungodlike thoughts. He made a real effort to mark the perfect man. And in order to do that, he had to be a deep enough thinker to get behind the dress and symbols of life. He made an effort to give man credit for being the image and likeness of God. What happened? It wasn't too long before he couldn't see with his glasses. Went to the eye doctor. Examined him, and he said, I don't know how it is, but your eyes are perfect. You have 20/20 vision. You just shouldn't have glasses, either for near or far. Said, you're completely okay. And this happened at a point where somebody said, he's over the hill. Whatever that may mean. Now, specifically, what clarified this professor's vision? What will help any of us have better vision in the larger sense? That is, what will help us see man as God made man? Massetti puts it this way in one of her books. The lens of science magnifies the divine power, the human sight. Then we see the allness of spirit and the nothingness of matter. There again is the premise of Christian Science. God, spirit, all spirit, man in truth, all spiritual, and so are man's faculties, including vision. Well, but what about physical man and his faculties? They're simply a material, theoretical sense of life and hypothesis that can be improved as we improve our thinking and think spiritually about ourselves and others, about man. Uplifted thinking, uplifted experience. You see, this false premise that matter makes man, unmakes man, remakes man, conditions man, has to be given up. As my professor friend found out, for the correct premise that spirit alone, God alone, is the reason for our being, and it's a good reason and a good being. My friends, it's vital that we check the premise from which we're reasoning about ourselves. I can still hear one of my professors at MIT saying, "All right, fellas, it's not how you reason, but from what premise." The important thing is not to be tricked and trapped into a false premise, believing man is physical, out of which comes bad conditions, sin, sickness, unhappiness, health, disappointment, so on. So, don't stick to the false premise. Stick to the truth of being, and you'll solve the problem. Mark the perfect man, God's beloved, everywhere. Now, we've been looking at individual problems. And we've seen how they're solved as we have a correct concept of man. What about collective problems affecting the community? They're dealt with much the same way. Maybe try to say that building a better world begins with you, with me, with each one of us, but I don't know any simpler way to put it. So better worlding, must be put into practice individually first. That reminds me when I first went in this lecture work and had an opportunity, as my introducer pointed out, to lecture for 50 states and many countries. This old timer said, "Charlie Carr, don't be so concerned about trying to reform the world that you forget to reform yourself." If we're to have a better world, we must think in terms of a lot of individual changes and actions. And the accumulation of many such changes and actions may lead to important major advances in all areas of our problem-ridden society. And take that problem of crime, for example. We're all deeply concerned about it. And I'd like to tell you about a friend of mine, a police inspector. He had charge of over 100 men. The crime rate was way up. Many of the men seemed irresponsible, uncooperative. Normally, my friend turned to spiritual truths in solving the problems. But this time, he allowed himself to be completely discouraged. He felt that problem was way out there and he couldn't do a thing about it. Now, nothing is outside of our thinking. We can always think better and act better. By visiting a city, I had a chance to talk with him. "Suppose you're a lawyer," I said. "Would you get paid primarily for the law books you read?" "Of course not," said to him. "If you just stopped there, you probably couldn't pay your bills. You would have to articulate the law specifically in behalf of your clients. Similarly, if you want to help this community, would you have to do more than read about the great spiritual truths of life?" "Of course you would. You have to argue these truths out specifically, thoroughly, in your own behalf. Men on the police force, people in the community, their attitudes, the way they act and react. He agreed. He set out to do this through prayer. Now that meant identifying man correctly, getting behind outward appearance judgments in the praises, giving man credit for being the image and likeness of God, no matter how awful some outward conditions appeared to be. He had to see man not as a spiritual being, not as a physical being, either materially good or materially bad. He couldn't afford to hold in his thought any prejudice or indifference. These would cloud up his vision of man. He couldn't do that anymore than he afford to let dirt accumulate in a car's windshield and cloud up the view of the road ahead. He had to get rid of all ungodlike thinking about man. He couldn't write anyone off because of ethnic considerations, economic conditions, or educational backgrounds. My officer friend had to keep his spiritual cool. He saw he couldn't downgrade anyone's spiritual potential. That in every one of us, there is in truth good, a spiritual impulse for good. He had to recognize, respect, see all the manifestations of God's creation as differing facets of the same gem of creation. Hold them up to the light of love and truth, to see, perceive man's true worth, intelligence, integrity, goodness. Further, he had to realize that although he wasn't his brother's keeper, he was the keeper of his thought about his brother. By working to see and surface spiritual good in himself, men on the police force, people in the community, this officer found the police force far more efficient. The spirit group improved, and there was a big reduction in crime. Here's what one man did. He said, I see the great difference between just reading in the Bible and said his writings about the truths of life and applying these things. And the latter is the payoff every time. That's, Jesus said, we should be known by our fruits. You should know the truth, it'll make you free. As this police inspector began to know the truth, apply it specifically, vigorously, there was a greater sense of freedom on his force and in the community. You see, the action of Christian Science is in prayer. It's a provable religion based on provable truths, not on religious abstractions. Prayer teaches us not to be respectful of material outward conditions. It teaches us to express the basic premise, to reflect and respect the basic premise that man, his home, his environment, his neighborhood, is essentially mental and spiritual. The activity of God, truth. Now, the realization of these great truths uplift our thinking about ourselves and others, about man. Uplifted thinking, a better individuals, and a better community. That well-known current author, Dr. Eric Fromm, indicates the need to make a real effort to penetrate to the core or heart of man, instead of being diverted by outward appearances. And he writes this: the difference in talents, intelligence, knowledge are negligible in comparison with the identity of the human core common to all men. In order to experience this identity, It is necessary to penetrate from the periphery to the core. If I perceive in another person mainly the surface, I perceive mainly the differences, that which separates us. If I penetrate to the core, I perceive the identity, the fact of our brotherhood. To experience man's identity by penetrating to the core is the point we've been making. To just cut through what separates us, to focus on our real selves. This is indeed to mark the perfect man. Let's look at another way in which this correct or spiritual concept of man operates. Many businessmen in today's communities agree that they have a responsibility in helping to establish a wider sense of brotherhood. An increasing number working to improve not only their own opportunities, but those of the disadvantaged. And let me tell you how a young friend of mine put this basic challenge to work in his community. He was a high school dropout, became an apprentice machinist. His wife interested him in Christian Science. And with his study, he began to see that man has a very real purpose in life. And man can greatly enhance his usefulness, ability, and opportunity as he recognizes that God is the fountainhead and source of his life. That God is the universal mind and gives man perspicuity, intelligence, and creative ability. That man is, in truth, a full reflection of mind. Well, my friend began to identify himself correctly. He got himself progressively unwrapped from matter, from the false belief that he was physical, with a mental motor inside that was running rather sluggishly. He got himself unwrapped from the false beliefs that he was a mortal out of orbit, didn't know where he was going, didn't have much education or intelligence or the brakes to make progress. Got himself progressively unglued from this false estimate of man, which was the result of a false premise. Began to acknowledge God more and more in his life, that God gives man ability, capacity, opportunity to express limitless good. What happened? Well, he did some wide-angle thinking. Remember, I spoke early in this talk about lateral thinking. Got himself separated from vertical thinking, traditional logic. Kept his thought open to God-directed ideas. Followed the admonition of a mutual friend who is a very successful lawyer. He said this, never rationalize yourself out of right ideas. The result? My friend was promoted in the company, finally had an opportunity to become plant manager in another company which wasn't doing too well financially, but he accepted that. Later became his president, owner, and has just recently bought another company. Well, with these new opportunities and challenges, he said, I make an extra special effort every day to give man credit for being the image and likeness of God, no matter how frustrating and disappointing outward appearance seemed to me. He said, I try to get behind outward appearance appraisals and judgments, and see man in the image and likeness of God, and I work to surface good in people. Well, as a result of this uplifted thinking, the employees have a fine esprit de corps. One of them said jokingly, you know, business is good around here as our thinking of people is better. And that company has been able to write off a 7-year stretch of loss in 3 years' time. At the end of 1971, its gross product has almost trebled.
But there's more to the story than that. I questioned my friend about hiring policies and community relations. Explained that from the start he made a point of hiring people on welfare rolls when possible and training them. He viewed them not as hardcore unemployables, but he penetrated to the core. He had seen the good inherent in each. You might say to introduce them to their real selves. And this true appreciation on his part helped them to develop their real potential. And the record shows that an increasing number of these disadvantaged has turned out exceptionally well. Further, my friend initiated a profit-sharing plan for all employees and special benefits as they advanced. The basic message of this incident is loud and clear. Our view of man, whether someone is a businessman, a professional person, a teacher, a homemaker, a student, an athlete, whatever we're doing, we're all in this thing together. Our view of man has to be dedicated, committed to see man in the image and likeness of God. We have to hold our concept of man up the light of love. Love for man in God's image and likeness. You remember that woman I spoke about earlier? She had to hold her gift in the sunlight, discovers true will. We need to hold man, our concept of everyone, in the light of love. The truth that man is the beloved of God. Then what happens? Increasing good is manifested all around freely. This reminds me what the head of a large project said to a young Christian scientist. I'm promoting you because of the way I expect you to see man. I'm promoting you because of the way I expect you to see man. That is, he realized the young man had developed the conscious active ability to see and surface spiritual good in people, regardless of outward appearance, to relate to man's inner reality. He felt that that was the most important ingredient in his ability to do an outstanding job. Really, then, what we've been saying is simply stated, but it does require action on our part. We need to see clearly, strive consciously to see and surface spiritual good in one another. And to accomplish this, we need to educate not only our heads, but our hearts. To see God-like qualities in everyone and work to surface these qualities. In conclusion, how you and I see man is vitally important. There's a story about a man who was hurrying through a bus terminal. He hastily threw a coin into the hat of a man selling pencils. Moments later, he came back to ask for his pencil. I want to apologize, said smilingly. I treated you like a beggar. Of course, you're a businessman. Some months later, he was passing through the same bus terminal, heard a voice hailing him from behind a neat newsstand. I've been watching for you, man said. You're the first person to treat me like a businessman, and now you see I am one. Well, we're all in the business of being the perfect man of God's creation. And equally important, seeing that perfect man in everyone. As we hold this concept of man up to the light of love, love for man, God's image and likeness, we'll radiate more than a human sense of good. We'll express that radical perceptiveness that cares, encourages, heals, renews friendships, brings an added sense of worth to ourselves and our important commitments to society. All of this good comes about
as you and I see or not, perfect spiritual man everywhere. Good evening.